Good afternoon. Let's go ahead and get started. This is a meeting of the Title Setting Board pursuant to Article 40 of Title I Colorado Revised Statutes. The time is 1:32 p.m. The date is April 28th, I think, 2009. We're meeting in the Secretary of State's Blue Spruce Conference Room, 1700 Broadway, Suite 270, Denver, Colorado. The title setting board today consists of the following. My name is Bill Hobbs, Deputy Secretary of State, here on behalf of Secretary of State Bernie Buescher. To my immediate right is Dan Domenico, Solicitor General, who is the representative of Attorney General John Southers. To my immediate left is Sharon Eubanks, Assistant Director for Deputy Director of the Office of Legislative Legal Services, who is the designee of the Director of the Office of Legislative Legal Services, Charlie Pike. Also at the table to my far left is Maury Kneiser, Deputy Attorney General, who represents the title board. And to my far right is Ceci Gomez of the Secretary of State's office. We have one agenda item today, a motion for rehearing. And there is a sign-up sheet in the room for anybody who wishes to testify on an agenda item. The meeting is recorded and broadcast over the internet. We will hear first from the proponent of the motion for rehearing and then from proponents of the initiative plus anybody else who wishes to testify on the motion for rehearing. And again, a decision is reached by two of the three members of the board. So with that, let's turn to the agenda item 2009-2010, number 19, general fund appropriations. And Mr. Atwood, I believe this is your motion for rehearing.
Yes,
if we could hear from you first, please, sir.
My name is Frank Atwood. I live in Littleton, Colorado. I ask this document be made part of the record.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
I'd like it. Have the Colorado, point one is, have the Colorado Sunshine Laws been followed in changing this hearing from May 29th to May 28th with less than 24 hours posted notice? And also, is it legally required to be on the 29th? Other issue is with regards to the issue of whether this proponent's initiative final text is substantially changed from the original as information. The A and B portions of the amended draft, based on review and comments, were not underlined, implying that those portions were part of the original when, in truth, they were amended to the original text. Additionally, by my count, the original text had about 75 words. More than two-thirds, 54 were deleted, and then added one and a third, 106, the original. This ends with an initiative about 40% more of the original, or approximately five times what was preserved from the original. And this does not, I'm kind of surprised that this does not substantially change the proposed initiative. I'd specifically like to return to Tabor intent. My understanding is because this is an odd year initiative, the presumption is this has no Tabor intent to it, and to read Tabor applicability into this is to misconstrue the intent of the initiative. Thank you, gentlemen. Lady.
Questions for Mr. Atwood? And we do have the benefit of your the material that you gave the board along with your motion for rehearing, which you had also passed out to the board at the initial hearing of the measure.
Thank you very much on that, and especially including it in the email. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Atwood? And I don't think I do. So if we could hear then from, I have three other people signed up, all apparently proponents. So I'm not sure who wants to take the lead or whether it's three of you at once. But if you'll come forward, identify yourselves for the record then, and give us your position on the motion for rehearing.
My name is Josh Cunningham. I am a proponent of the initiative and here to refute the claims of the motion for rehearing.
My name is Chris Kennedy. I'm also a proponent.
I want to start by reading, I believe it's from the Constitution. It talks about the reasons why you can appeal for a rehearing or file a motion for rehearing. It says, any person presenting an initiative petition or any registered elector who is not satisfied with the decision of the title board with respect to whether a petition contains more than a single subject pursuant to section 1-40-106.5, or who is not satisfied with the titles and submission clause provided by the title board, and who claims that they are unfair or that they do not fairly express the true meaning and intent of the proposed state law or constitutional amendment, may file a motion for a rehearing with the Secretary of State within 7 days after the decision is made, and the titles and submission clauses are set. And what this says is that my interpretation of that is that the only reason you can file, the only argument you can make in a rehearing is that it doesn't fit single subject or that the title and submission clause not accurately represent the language of the initiative. So I would say that in this document submitted by Mr. Atwood, that 2A and B would not qualify as being eligible, you know, would not be something that we can consider here today. And, oh, along with number 3 as well. Those decisions have already been made in the first hearing, and none of those relate to single subject or the language of the title, the submission clause.
So before we go any further, I guess we'd like to know if you agree with our understanding of the statute or the constitutional section that we just read. Otherwise, we can address the other points.
Well, I guess my reaction is, just speaking for myself, that that any of the issues that were proper when the board initially heard the measure would still be proper if there are jurisdictional issues. And I think I think all of them are before us because the original motion for rehearing includes them. So that includes single subject and other jurisdictional issues, as well as objections to the title or the violation of the requirement that substantial changes not in response to the questions would have to be resubmitted and so forth.
Okay. Well, we can certainly address these points then. With regards to the Sunshine Laws, I guess I'll skip over that for now. I'm not particularly familiar with what that states, but I also don't think we were responsible for the date that was set for this hearing. So starting with point 2A, we talked about the amended drafts based on review and comments were not underlined, implying that those portions were part of the original, when in truth they were amendments to the original text. See, do we have that amended version? The changes.
Well, do you have the current version that you're proposing? Because I think, if I understand this right, the point is that what's now listed as A and B were added after review and comment. And so Is that true is kind of the... Is Mr. Atwood correct about that?
Yes, I mean, obviously, you know, looking at the original, Section A and B were added. Those are formatting changes that came at, you know, went along with the review and comments, so they were directly tied to those review and comments, to the review and comment memo.
The language in A and B is all new from review and comment. That's correct.
They're all response to issues that were brought up in the review and comment hearing. All but Section B were directly tied to something on the memo. The Section B, which talks about a reserve, was something that was brought up as a question. I think it was DiCecco asked a question. He hadn't thought about it when he was putting together the memo, and he thought about it during the hearing. And so he brought up the issue and suggested, and we have it on tape, that suggested that we add language that kind of clarified what we were talking about.
So, yes, it's new, but it's not a new intent, nor is it a new subject. It is a clarification of the previous text, in a sense narrowing it to meet the recommendations of the review and comment.
Okay.
I guess we can move on to point B, which addressed the word count. I guess my initial response is that the number of words is kind of an irrelevant point with regards to any change that took place. As we discussed in the original hearing here, the intent did not change from the beginning in our original submittal to OLLS to this point in time. The language, this change in word count, I have not counted myself. I imagine it includes such things as adding at the beginning, be it enacted by the people of the state of Colorado, and specifying that we're amending the Constitution by the addition of a section rather than simply just stating the intent as we did originally. So formatting changes in order to fit with the law and fit this piece of legislation into the Constitution were the reason for the change in word count.
I think number three, if you're challenging whether or not this relates to a Tabor issue, it has yet to be decided and yet has been Senate Bill 228 takes on the assumption that appropriation limits are not constitutionally protected. However, that legislation has not been signed yet. It is not in effect yet. And it has been long held since 1991 when the Arvascoa bird limit was passed and since the passage of Tabor, that such a limit was protected under the constitutional provision of Tabor and did constitute a spending limit. And I think that easily makes it, you can easily make the argument that by taking those away, we are simply complying with the Tabor requirement that weakening a spending limit requires a vote of the people. And since the issue of whether or not appropriations limits has not been officially declared, has not been officially determined to be exempt from that requirement, I think you can say that our initiative would relate to Tabor.
I think that's all we have.
Are there any specific things that you guys are concerned with or would want to ask us about?
Does the board have any other questions for proponents? And I'm also including in that you know, the objections that were raised in the other document as well, but I don't think I have any questions about it. So unless the board does, I may have one or two questions for Mr. Atwood, but I don't think I have any questions of proponents. So, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Atwood, could I ask you a couple of questions about the motion for rehearing? And so, I hadn't seen this new document, so I was trying to digest that, and I should have asked this earlier. With respect to point one, I'm not aware that the meeting date was changed. I'm not sure whether the only meeting notice that I have was May 28th, but you know, perhaps you received something else that I don't have, but and I do want to, well, give you a chance to look at that.
The the Secretary of State's Initiative and Referendum Procedure and Guideline 2009-2010 states that the hearing I apologize. I read it as May 29th, and I see that it's Thursday, May 28th to Friday, May 29th. Motions for rehearing shall be heard within 48 hours after the expiration of the 7-day period for filings for rehearing. I locked on to May 29th. I apologize.
Okay, I appreciate that. Thank you. You're correct that under the statute we had to meet either May 28th or May 29th, and okay, there had been some discussion about when to meet, so I just didn't know whether something else had gone out that said May 29th.
No.
Okay. And on your item number 3 on today's handout?
Yes.
What is the objection there?
I just want to clarify if the intent of this initiative has any bearing on Tabor.
I mean, I'm trying to frame that in terms of our job as to whether or not we set titles. Is there an issue here that would prevent us from setting titles for the measure?
No.
Okay. Very good. Okay, thank you. Are there any other questions for Mr. Atwood? If not, then I don't have anyone else signed up to testify. Is there anybody else who wishes to testify? Seeing none, then I'll turn to board discussion. Any discussion by the board? Mr. Domenico?
I think I expressed some reservations, mostly about the procedural aspects, and I think while I appreciate the proponent's statutory analysis, I think that I agree with Mr. Hobbs when we're talking about jurisdictional questions, that we can sort of, those are always, if we don't have jurisdiction, we can always analyze that and should always make sure we don't proceed if we don't have jurisdiction. And I think that both single subject and kind of the procedural problems that the opponents have raised fall into that category. I'm still troubled and even probably a little bit more troubled by sort of the cumulative nature of the various procedural problems with the changes, especially that were made. I don't know that any single one of them would overcome the kind of liberal reading we give to the initiative statutes. But it strikes me that there were some fairly major changes made, even if they were in some way in response to suggestions or comments made orally at the review and comment hearing. And in addition, there is in the document we got that is supposed to accurately reflect the changes that were made, there's both language included in there that is not apparently, in fact, in the measure that the proponents are trying to put forward. There are two fairly lengthy, not totally insignificant, I think, subsections that, until I got this document today, I assumed were always part of the proposal, but in fact were added after review and comment. the language, and most substantively, the language was added about not previously dedicated by the Constitution, is a fairly major substantive change where it seems to me there's likely to be a huge fight eventually over what exactly that means. And adding that after review and comment, especially when the proponents have sort of been coy about whether they intend for that language to protect Tabor refunds or whether they think that this measure would effectively invalidate that aspect of Tabor in the future, that adding that after review and comment to something brought up orally is troubling to me. And again, I'm not sure any one of those alone is a problem, but added together, I struggle to say that this has substantially complied with the various procedural requirements to get it properly in front of us.
And I do share some concern about the basically the accumulation of procedural issues. You know, I've now had the benefit of reviewing more carefully Mr. Atwood's original objections, and I do think, although the measure is the words are quite different. There are the additional provisions. I can't conclude that that the changes were not in response to the review and comment hearing, and I don't think that the changes rise to the level that the court has talked about, where it refers to what's the language where a measure differs so substantially from the measures from the language submitted for review and comment that in it, and I'll quote here, it says in effect constitutes a new proposal requiring resubmission. Although the words are quite different, it does seem to me that it's essentially the same proposal. And as far as I can tell, the changes are substantially in response to the comments during review and comment. I think there are benefits to proponents generally to resubmit, especially when the wording has changed so significantly. And although I think it may have been better for proponents to resubmit, I can't say that it was legally required to the extent that we cannot set titles. You know, some of the other things that Mr. Atwood raised, I might just comment a little bit more on since I've had a little more chance to think about them. You know, one of the issues was the fact that proponents listed five representatives and not two. And although I may be wrong, I'm inclined to think that the statute requires exactly two. In sort of searching through the initiative law, there's a couple of places where the law talks about two representatives, and it's not really clear whether that means two or more. There is a reference in 1-40-120 that refers to withdrawing a petition in certain circumstances, and it does say the petition may be withdrawn by the two persons designated pursuant to 1-40-104, which implies to me that the intent was there be exactly two. But I also don't think that, even if that's true, that the law is calling for exactly two representatives, that having more representatives designated deprives the title board of jurisdiction to set titles. And as an aside, I think if the proponents get to the point of submitting a petition to the Secretary of State's office for approval, which is one of the upcoming steps, the petition format has to designate the petition representatives, and I suspect the Secretary of State's office would require exactly two proponents in order to approve the format. But with respect to title board jurisdiction, I don't see that as an issue. I think, as I recall, there was an error in the highlighting, but again, I don't think it I don't think it rose to the level of violating substantial compliance. I think we've pretty much talked about most of the other issues, and it does seem to me that the measure is a single subject, and I think I'd be inclined to deny the motion for rehearing. Ms. Eubanks, do you have any comments?
Sure. I do think, as Mr. Hobbs stated, that we've discussed the issues that have been brought up on motion for rehearing, especially in terms of the procedural issues at the original hearing on this measure. I agree that it may be to the benefit of the proponents if they had resubmitted for review and comment. It may help deal with some of the procedural issues. It may help deal with some of the potential issues down the road in terms of ascertaining the meaning and intent of language currently in their proposal. But I don't think that they're legally required to, as long as the changes made, even if they were substantive, were in direct response to the review and comment meeting. And based on the proponents' representations that they were, and them understanding the risks involved, as they can see how this is probably going to play out, that will probably be litigated, and the court will have to decide whether that, in fact, that's true. But at this point, I think in terms of the procedural issues, I think the title board has jurisdiction. I don't believe that having five listed proponents is fatal to us being able to set a title, and I'm basically in the same position as Mr. Hobbs in terms of being in a position to deny the motion for rehearing.
Can I apologize. I think I would like to ask the proponents one question, if I could. And it's just, what comment exactly was the language about not previously dedicated by the Constitution? What was that directly in response to?
Well, if you look at the original language, the original draft, the review and comment hearing, they had an issue with the word previous, and so we... originally it said... to ensure the state's economic prosperity maximize its effectiveness, the General Assembly shall have the power to appropriate all general funds above prior fiscal year general fund revenues to state departments, agencies, and programs for any other funding need, notwithstanding any previous enactment to the contrary. And so when we added So we amended that to say that not currently obligated by existing constitutional provisions. I mean, essentially that's what we were trying to say, but we didn't word it very well. So the comments, where's the comment substantive comment, number 8A, does previous mean prior to the effective date of the initiative? To the extent that the initiative may amend the Colorado Constitution or the Colorado Revised Statutes, this phrase may be confusing a decade from now. Does enactment refer to a statutory or constitutional provision? So we want to make the clarification that it was a constitutional provision. Does to the contrary mean to the contrary of the power of the General Assembly to appropriate funds? And, so we were just clarifying. The biggest clarification was to make sure that we knew that we were talking about the constitutional provisions and not statutory as well.
Okay. I appreciate that. And I very much appreciate any time someone gets rid of the word notwithstanding, which is a horrible word that is inherently ambiguous, I think. So I appreciate that. And I think that answered my question because could have been, depending on how you read the notwithstanding clause, a fairly substantive change. But if that's what the intent was, that both makes me a little bit less concerned that you are making a major substantive change and also makes me, understand the measure better about whether it was its effect, especially on Tabor, but other constitutional provisions. And so thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Any other discussion by the board? If not, is there a motion? Ms. Eubanks?
I move that we deny the motion for rehearing on proposed initiative 2009-2010, number 19.
I'll second that. Any further discussion? Not all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. That concludes action on number 19. So thank you very much. Thank you.
Sincere thanks. Thank you all. Congratulations.
Thank you.
I think our next meeting is next Wednesday, 1:30. Did we say? I don't know. If we've 1:30. We'll probably start with number 20, I believe it is, the measure on civil unions, and then the remaining agenda items. So, and we may, at some point, we want to have a discussion about some of the procedural issues that the board follows, and if Mr. Kneiser could be there, we might be able to have that discussion next Wednesday as well. So we'll put it on the agenda. Okay. Thanks, everyone. We are adjourned. The time is 2:07 p.m.